Safety first.
Our guest for today's episode is Sam Curry. Sam is a visionary in many areas of cybersecurity. After being at the helm of several companies, Sam is currently CSO, Chief Security Officer of CyberReason. Today we will find out about Sam's view on the future of cybersecurity after the impact of the coronavirus crisis. We will discuss how the pandemic and the accompanying economic situation are affecting cybersecurity and who is benefiting from these developments. Is COVID-19 changing the threat landscape, and how can we prepare for it? Sam will share with us the two most important aspects to watch out for. So I'm very happy we have Sam Curry on our podcast today. Hello, Sam.
Hi, Shaleen. Good to be here.
Maybe you can tell us a little about yourself, where you come from, what are you doing?
I am originally Canadian. I live in the United States now, and I'm the Chief Security Officer for a company called CyberReason. I'm also a visiting fellow at the National Security Institute here in the United States, and I'm having fun every day with security, basically.
With cybersecurity, especially.
Yes, specifically. My wife often says, when you say security, people think you're a security guard. I am a cybersecurity person. So yes, I have been doing that for almost 30 years now.
In December 2019, you predicted trends for cybersecurity in 2020.
Yeah.
As it turns out now, the corona pandemic changed our whole life in so many aspects, and no one really foresaw that, obviously. Now, looking back to your earlier predictions, what changed because of the COVID-19? Is there a concrete impact on the cybersecurity trends you predicted earlier?
If you get everything right with an adaptive system, if all the good guys follow your advice, the bad guys will choose different paths. If you don't, if you're like Cassandra and you make a forecast for the future and you're ignored, why are you doing it? So I tried to give useful advice. What can people take action with that it won't change the system? And so how can I give meaningful advice that will help them through whatever comes? And so I tried to look at what trends are happening with malware, with the behavior of the bad guys. One of the things that I emphasized was the importance of understanding geopolitics, because cyber is an extension of politics by other means, just like war is. It's just a less risky one with more reach and more power, I think. In other words, it takes less money. You can go everywhere in the world and you can achieve your aims if you have a cyber agenda rather than a classic one, rather than missiles and bombs. And nation states have picked up on this. And so I said, look, you have to pay attention to things like Brexit and things like presidential elections. And at the time I said impeachment as well, because the US president was facing impeachment. And the Olympics, when people come together in a spirit of unity and internationalism, that can become a target. And little did I realize most of those things would be radically different just 3 or 4 months later.
How will the economic downturn influence how companies and society will deal with cybersecurity in the future in the face of economic problems as companies hesitate to invest or have to cut their investments down?
That's an excellent question. I think the first thing to realize is that this is fundamentally a geopolitical question. It is a political question rather than a cyber one. And we have so much uncertainty there. I wound up, somebody said, hey, what should I do to maximize my bets? I said, we don't know. Right now is a period of instability and uncertainty. And I said, you should draw the decision tree. Effectively, you draw a line and you say, here comes a point where I don't know what will happen. Will we go in, maintain the quarantine, say, you know, after 3 months, or will we release the quarantine? And then you follow each tree and you ask, for instance, do we have to go back? Because Japan released the quarantine and had to return to it. And other countries are faced with similar decisions in the weeks and months ahead. And then you reach a point where you say, will the economy recover in a lasting way or won't it? And then you now have a tree where you can look at all the, at the bottom, as you've drawn these out, you can say, am I prepared for each of these outcomes? It's not a frequency diagram, but it tells you what the world of the possible is. And it would be great if we could start to resolve some uncertainty as we learn which of these paths we're going to be taking societally, you can then say what will happen. But I do know the following, which is in times of economic recession, talented people have no outlet for their skills. They become available resources. I'm not saying people are unethical, but the available pool of resources for hacking goes up. And I am concerned that we're going into a world of xenophobia and isolationism and blaming the foreign or the other. In that world, we become not just less globalized, which means less integrated economically, it becomes easier to reach for the weapon. And cyber is a ready weapon that can be used at scale quickly. Don't think of cyber as a tool of war. I get very upset when people talk about weapons of cyber mass destruction, right? Like, this is not a nuclear deterrent. Instead, think of it as an extension of politics, right? So when trade breaks down or diplomacy breaks down, you reach for other tools. It could be espionage. It could be military. It could be assassination. This is what nation states do. But look at cyber. Less risk, more reach, more flexibility in a connected world. Whether or not we on the defense prioritize cyber, the offense may do it, which will force our hand. What I don't like about that is it can tie up valuable resources for companies and for governments. We would much rather be in a less bellicose, a less warlike society, taking these other forms of extensions of diplomacy and politics and spending the money on growing business. But I think in a connected world, which is what we have, when there's less globalization, the threats rear up. We've seen it in the COVID retreat, in the lockdown that we've had. We've seen attacks on critical infrastructure. We have a common watering hole around the disease itself. And so we've seen increases in phishing, in bad applications. And the amount of activity on the dark side is way, way up. I don't think we have the luxury of not being able to prioritize cyber. I don't like having the hand forced, but I don't think that's going away.
You just said something about this decision tree. Maybe you can explain it a little bit more.
Yeah, so if you take a blank sheet of paper, I would turn it vertically because you're probably going to go down quite a bit, and you start with a dot, draw a line, some period of time out, and draw another dot, and fork it, split it. And you can keep doing this. It looks a bit like maybe a fractal diagram or like a simple nervous system or a tree. And you literally at each one mark what happens if A or B, or you can even do three outcomes. And then you follow it through, and each tree you complete down to a point where you get to where you care about, like say a year and a half, 2 years away. The point isn't to see what's likely to happen, it's to see what the world of the possible is, right? What does it look like if we spend 12 months in quarantine and we go into a depression and that there is no vaccine for this, right? And that is one outcome at the bottom of the tree. Also, what if we rebound quickly and we have an economic resurgence? What happens with the U.S. federal presidential elections? These are things that you can put in the decision tree. And I find it helps because, at least for me, I like to think about what are the pathways? And then I take a step back and go, now, which do I think will happen? What data am I receiving that lets me update my diagram? And this is important because cyber is a tool that will be used by all actors, good and bad, on each of the branches of this tree.
So when we zoom in on the cybersecurity companies, how do they react at the moment to the insecurity? What do you see already in cyber attacks on one side, in development of security and the technologies on the other side?
Yeah, so let's unpeel those in two groups, the companies and then the attackers, right? And the companies, I'm going to further break into three. The first group is, call it startups. They're in a considerable amount of danger right now, because while they might have great ideas, it'll be macroeconomic things that determine if they succeed or fail. And it, you know, I don't want to be alarmist, but the longer the economic slowdown continues, the more all startups are facing an extinction-like event. You cannot maintain operations and growth as a startup when it is a stifling environment and when spending is at an all-time low. The second category among the good guys is, or I should say among the defenders, is the companies that are large enough that they have enough critical mass to survive. And you'll see that they have a bit more resilience right now. Those that help companies survive this radical departure from the perimeter, as we all work from home, as we all commute all the time, telecommute, they're the ones that will, for a short time, have a stay of execution. They will have a lag in the economic impact on them. The smart ones will start acting as if they're being affected by it right now. It is intelligent to minimize operational costs and preserve cash flow as much as possible. And then there's the third category, which are the very large companies, of which cyber is just one business. And it's harder to predict those because it depends how their macro businesses are behaving. And so you've got these three different kinds of companies that will each experience a different thing. I think after we get out of this phase, you'll see an explosion of creativity and a resurgence of cyber companies, because the cyber is here to stay. The rest of the economy is a connected economy, and it must be secure. Now, on the dark side, what we've seen is massive investments in things like phishing attacks, the low-hanging fruit. I used an analogy of crabs. Crabs have an exoskeleton. And when they grow, they shed that exoskeleton, and then they're vulnerable. And effectively what's happened is a bunch of crabs have, for environmental reasons, just had to shed their exoskeleton. It's molting, right? They lose that hard shell. And the predators know. They circle. They see the easy eats that they can get, and they're going after the easy targets. And a lot of the attackers are now starting to invest in new attack forms. They're going to go after home targets, home automation, printers and routers, for instance.
So especially these old technologies are a target.
Yeah, the what's old is new again. You know, I joke that in defense, it feels like 2000 because the help desk tickets are all about password resets and VPN, right? That's all come back. On offense, it's dust off the attacks that we had for the old printer sitting at home that didn't see much, but now two or three companies are perhaps going over the same network, and it's a home network. And there's something that I'm not seeing enough people talk about, which is as people go back to work, in whatever phase it happens, we're thinking in a two-state system. We think there was before coronavirus, then there was during coronavirus. After must be a return to before. It's not. It's a third state. And I'll be a little bit more specific. When we went from state one to state two, we had fight or flight instinct. We had adrenaline rush. We suddenly said, we need strong authentication. We need to make sure those endpoints are secure. We need to make sure everybody has an endpoint. Then we're in the second phase. We're like, we're starting to get confident in this. Now we're returning, but you're bringing back laptops that previously weren't part of the standard operating environment into the company. It is not just figurative, it is actually a Trojan horse. There are machines that will be coming inside the firewall, having come from, first of all, machines we've never had inside before, and secondly, they've been on networks that they've never been on before. And I think it's non-trivial to have everybody come back to the office. There's a new risk registry that's needed. And the problem is that nobody's aware of it. They think, oh, I knew what phase one was like. I'm returning to it. They don't think of it as a new phase that needs its own risk management and a different dialogue. And my suspicion is that a lot of phishing attacks and routings of systems will be persistent. And some of them will be very, shall we say, clandestine. They'll be very secretive. They won't play their hand. They're waiting to be brought back into the enterprise when we all go back to work.
So let's continue to look at some of your pre-corona predictions.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Let's go back and see how wrong I was. Yeah.
You wrote about a much-needed surge in cybersecurity innovation. Is now the time for this to happen, or don't you see that?
I also was rather disparaging. I called it a lemon market. Lemon market comes from the secondhand car market in the United States, and I think in other countries as well, in Canada. You know you're going to pay a lot of money, and you know your car is going to stink, right? I don't know if it's true elsewhere, but generally you're paying a premium for something that's not so good. And so I refer to security that way because you would think from the behavior of a lot of the big cyber companies that the biggest problem is the other company. I won't name names, but I can think of two companies right now that are having a war over who's better at a particular class of product. And neither of them is busy saying what the value for the customer is and how to actually stop bad guys. I think when I did it as a prediction, I said there would be a consolidation going on, that there's disruption in certain security markets and a lot of innovation from startups. So here's how it could go now. It could be that, as I described earlier, a lot of those startups start to go out of business and the competitive pressure goes away. I really hope that doesn't happen. I like having a lot of small, innovative startups reminding us what we're supposed to be doing. And the other way it could go is the bad guys get so bold and they become so aggressive that in fact we start to say, hey, as security practitioners, do we say to our vendors, hey, I need you to actually innovate and stop bad guys. I'm going to hold you accountable for it. So I would like to see startups thrive, and I would like to see the pressure really lead to a flourishing in evolution of the companies in the market. It is an evolutionary marketplace. I don't think where it's going to be clear cut, though. So I don't know yet if COVID is going to make it, my prediction, more or less true, but it's more aspirational. I hope we innovate as an industry, and I hope that doesn't get slowed down by current events.
How do you compare the cybersecurity policies among countries? Can you judge what goes on in the US, China, Europe regarding to cybersecurity?
Offensive or defensive? Well, let's deal with those separately, right? An ability to defend oneself and organize to protect the public sector, critical infrastructure, and the general public, that's always a good thing. But if you build an army, people tend to use it, right? In other words, the skills exist to do other things. And the projection of power in that way is difficult. The quote, authorized or legal use of force. It's happening, right? Hacking is happening and hack back is happening. But I don't think we have enough established norms, international norms. I'm not necessarily an advocate of a cyber Geneva Convention, but we don't have any equivalent to that. In other words, when is it justified? When is it not justified? And we live in a world where if somebody takes a cyber pot shot at you, it's extremely difficult to know who did it. It's not a trivial matter. And so you wind up with retaliation, perhaps against wrong targets. You have even when there have been nation state attacks against the private sector, where people have come out and said it was this country, different agencies have said different countries, right? So there is inevitably the building up of offensive capability. And it's the same thing as building a military. Right. I wish we lived in a world where that wasn't the case. And I hope we get some new norms in when it's okay to use it and when it's not. But sovereign states have nothing over them to hold them accountable. They are where it ends. There is no international court that isn't voluntarily subscribed to. So the best thing we can do is get back to a globalized society pretty quickly so that people are going to be less likely to use this tool more often.
Do you think state actors will use the current chaos and unpredictability to build up cyber warfare?
Yep. But I don't think it's unusual. I think it existed before. I think they'll just adapt their tactics. They probably had some meetings that said, so how do we take advantage of the current situation? But this is business as usual. And I'm less worried about the claims of cyber pearl, very Anglo-centric, I apologize, but very, like cyber Pearl Harbors, right? Or cyber 9/11s, where a terrible, devastating attack is delivered. I think we societally and as a species, we respond really well to existential threats. The more insidious thing is the institutional threat, the thing that's always going on in the background. So the answer is yes, but it's not unusual. They're doing the same thing around a presidential election, around an Olympic Games. They're doing the same thing all the time. They meet weekly to decide what their strategy is going to be for the next week. And they did it, and they will. That's not really that remarkable.
So let's come to the end and get back a little bit more to companies and cybersecurity.
Sure.
How would you advise any kind of company confronted with the current situation, seeing the economic downturn, maybe even having to fire people or close down, and at the same time being attacked by cyber criminals? Is there a single thing that any company must do now for its cybersecurity?
Yep. The single thing is talk. Like, honestly, that's it. It's no more, no less than that. And I'll get a bit more specific as to what to talk about and why. Most of the things a business has to deal with are first-order chaos. First-order chaos systems are chaotic, complex, but there's no intelligence behind adaptation. What do I mean by that? The weather system is a first-order chaos system where a hurricane is a threat. How you take shelter from the hurricane does not affect the path of the hurricane. Coronavirus is a threat in the biological chaos system. How you protect yourself from coronavirus doesn't affect how it intelligently adapts. I'll give you an example now of a second-order chaos system. A second-order chaos system is crime. If you put police officers on different street corners, different stores will get robbed or muggings will happen because an intelligence is moving. For coronavirus to be a second-order chaos system, the virus would have to say, I'm going through an airport, lower my host's body temperature. That doesn't happen, right? companies usually deal with first-order chaos. In first-order chaos systems, you can put controls in place, measure changes, and automation, and then that's it. You can get to five nines of quality. In a second-order chaos system, anything you do will eventually get beaten, exploited, or get worse. Now, it doesn't get instantly worse, and so it's not. Don't get depressed. This is not a zero-sum game. It has a rate at which it gets worse, depending on how good the control you choose is. But you have to get into the thinking of, my security isn't measured by how I am today. It's the rate at which I adapt. How adaptive am I in defense? And so what that means is, you have to actually, as human beings, sit together and talk about it. And so you need to have a talk at the C level, not about the biggest problem is this, and if we fix it, we're okay. Because then you set the expectation that that's ever possible. And so what you've got to do is say, here's my risk registry. Here's what I'm focusing on right now. Do we accept the things I'm not focusing on? Don't panic. You know, we have that conversation. And then I come back in 2 weeks and say, here's the new risk registry. Here's what I did. Here's what I measured down. Here's how it's faring. Here's the new priorities. It's that ongoing dialogue that's important. And if you don't have it in your company, then hopefully COVID's an opportunity to start it. You should do two things in cyber. One is have this ongoing talk and then prepare for the crisis moment so you have reflexes you can call on.
I think that's a perfect ending for this.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure. And I look forward to talking to you again.
You will find all our episodes at tuvsud.com/podcast. That is tuvsud.com/podcast. tuvsud.com/podcast. There will be more shows coming up in English soon, so stay tuned. You can listen and subscribe to Safety First not only on our website, but also on many podcatchers. Thanks for listening, and of course, stay well and safe. Safety First is produced by TÜV Süd, editorial support and audio production by Ikone Media.